Welcome to the Student Paramedic Podcast. Welcome to our very first episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. My name's Alex, and today we have on Britt Shaw. Now, Britt is a graduate intern paramedic with the New South Wales Ambulance Service, and she began that back in May of this year. She was the Queensland coordinator in 2018 and 19 for the Student Paramedic Australasia, or SPA, group. So she's going to give us some insight today into what it's like to be a graduate paramedic, and we hope you enjoy it. Today is our very first episode, and we are sitting with Brayden.
Hey guys, and I'm also joined here by Britt Shaw. Britt, introduce yourself.
Hey guys, so for those of you who don't know me, I'm a graduate paramedic intern with New South Wales Ambulance, and I'm really excited to be here. Thank you guys so much for inviting me along.
Thank you for coming. It's great.
It's nice to come back up, cross the border for a couple of minutes and enjoy what Queensland's got to offer.
Back on the good side.
Yeah.
So how long have you been in the GPIP program for?
So I started back in May and I've been on road now since June. So we did the 5 week at Roselle, which is our sort of our induction period, and then been out on road ever since then.
Yeah, very nice. So what made you want to go to New South Wales? Was it just apply everywhere you can go, or?
Pretty much they gave me a phone call. Like, you know, in this day and age, you'd be silly sort of to turn down jobs. But so when I graduated, I only applied to two services, Queensland and New South Wales. And New South Wales just happened to grab me when they did. So, you know, I've got one of my dream stations, so you can't be mad at that at all.
Very nice. If you don't mind sharing where about to your station.
So I'm at Tweed Heads, so right on the border, which has been very lucky, especially with all the closures that have happened with COVID, still been able to sort of come back home when I've needed to. So quite lucky with that.
Very nice.
That's pretty awesome to hear. So you only applied to Queensland and New South Wales. Was there anything that held you back from other services, or were you just attracted to the lifestyle from here?
Honestly, family was a massive part. For me, I didn't really want to move away too far. And I sort of wanted to spend that first year out, just sort of see what happens. If Queensland and New South Wales didn't take me, I'd just chuck in applications to other states and be more sort of open to moving then. But to start off with, it was just sort of trying to stay close to home.
That's great. And then like you got best of both worlds being in Tweed as well.
Yeah, really can't complain. Like won the lotto with stations there. So quite happy.
That's awesome. So going from Queensland Ambulance Service down to New South Wales Ambulance, what was the change like? Because you're obviously trained in Queensland. Now you're working in completely foreign grounds.
Look, it takes its toll. I'm now on road for 4 or 5 months now, and still to this day, still get caught up on little things. And it's not just the big things like drug dosages or, you know, different protocols or different attitudes towards things. It's something as simple as calling something a different name, like an RTC versus an MVA. You know, different states have different little things.
For the listeners out there, can you just say what an RTC and MVA is?
RTC, so road traffic crash. That's typically from what I found more so what Queensland side uses, whereas MVA, which is a motor vehicle accident, is more typical to the New South Wales audience. So little tiny things, but catches you up when you're at a job.
That'd be really difficult, especially because you're only, what, you said it, a few months into it as well. You'd still be learning all of that.
Yeah, you know, and like I'm really lucky. I'm surrounded by some great paramedics who are like our qualified officers in the area. They're not afraid to call me out when I accidentally slip up with those things. So you're sort of juggling everything at the same time, trying to remember what language to use with it. You know, it has its moments, but I'm really lucky. And the fact that, you know, I now have a good understanding of two different states and I can understand like the clinical reasoning behind why different protocols happen puts you into a better standing down the, you know, in the long run.
That's awesome. Do you want to step us through what that process was like applying for the graduate position as a final year student?
So for me, applications, I think New South Wales opened quite early on. I think they opened up, you know, March or June of our final year. So you're chucking in that application, you know, before you've even finished your first semester of final year. Queensland opened up quite late in the year. I think they were about November or December. So you had a bit more time to sort of get prepared for that. But you know, every application process starts off the same. It's always an online application tool that you submit. And every single state service have all the information all ready to go. So when it came time for New South Wales applications to open, I had all of my documents already, you know, compiled, ready to submit for that first day that they open up. So it's sending off those initial stuff, making sure that you follow all the instructions that they give you. They make it, you know, really simple for you to know what needs to be done during those steps. For New South Wales, we then had to go and do online testing. So it was different psychological testing and cognitive trials and things like that. If you're successful with that, they selected a group of us to go and do an in-person interview, and that was held down in Sydney. We actually had to travel down for it. I can still remember mine. I did on like the last day they offered the interviews. I'd just been over in London. I'd flown back like 2 days before it. I was sick as a dog, and I can still remember doing the actual interview part of it and not having a voice to be able to answer the question. So I had to write down some of my answers, which made the interviewer laugh a little bit, and, you know, still got the job in the end, so I must have done something right with it. So that was sort of our main hurdle. And then from there, it was just a matter of just sitting and waiting until they called us up for medical tests and things like that, and fitness test. Queensland, because our application sort of went in just before COVID hit, it's been a very different process to any other year. So I can't really comment on that. You know, we did our online testing, and then COVID struck, and it's, you know, they're doing what they can with the best of the situation. So, and then I can't really talk about any other states, but everything is always outlined, and it's a very similar process amongst all of them.
So waiting for a job to become available, how long on average is that wait? Do you get accepted, then you're born straight into a job? Is it a 2-year wait? What's the go with that?
Look, how long's a piece of string, really? I've got friends who, you know, we finished uni and 2 weeks later they were in an induction group. And then I've got friends who were waiting 3 years on a wait list. So it's really, you know, it depends what service you're going for, whether you're willing to go rural and regional, whether you're staying metro. You know, I don't even know half the factors that go into play with it, but, you know, there's a massive difference between some of the results.
So with that then, what can students do in that time of waiting, do you reckon, to keep their skills relevant or current and, I don't know, and still be able to do the job? Because everyone just thinks you should become a state paramedic, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they don't really know what's out there and what else they can do.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing. The motto that I sort of go with for it all is having realistic expectations of what your goal is at the end of the degree. If that's that you want to be a state service paramedic and you want to sit in an ambulance that has Queensland or Victoria or whatever state on the side of it, then that's your goal and push for it. But, you know, that's the same goal that, you know, another couple of thousand students also have. So for me, the goal was that I just wanted to wear a uniform that said paramedic on it. That was my only goal. I didn't mind if that was in an ambulance. I didn't mind if that was, you know, in a mine site, in a private industry. That was all that I wanted. So for me, it meant that I had a realistic goal to hold on to when I graduated if I didn't get that first round offer, if I wasn't straight into that ambulance. So it's once you sort of graduate, think about the things, and even in your final year or in your second year, even our first year listeners, what you can do now to sort of make just that goal an attainable goal. And if it's something where you've got 3 steps that you want to go through, then go for it. It might be a case that you go and you want to do some postgrad study in a different sort of field. You might be really interested in midwifery or obstetrics, and you go and you do some study into that. So you're still keeping, you know, part of the paramedics goal there, but you might not necessarily be working to what some people deem to be, you know, the only result that could be a state service paramedic, and that's not the case at all.
Yeah, nice. So how long was your wait, and I guess what did you do in that time?
To be honest, I caught up on as much sleep as I could have. And then once you work full time and you start doing night shifts again, you're really grateful for the sleep that you've sort of banked up a bit. But for me, I graduated, I think I course completed in November, and then I was in an ambulance in, you know, May. So about, what's that, 6 months, five, 6 months. So I was quite fortunate. That's, you know, quite quick going through. Before that, I worked up at the mine site as a paramedic up there for a couple of months, and just sort of during the COVID period, just worked up there. So for me, it was mainly just staying on top of things. Like every ambulance service, you've got access to their protocols. There should be no excuse when you know, if you've had 2 years off to not turn up on day one and still be current on at least the key components. Like you should still be able to say, your adrenaline drug dosages, your indications for your key drugs. You should still have that basic understanding around it. So it was sort of staying on top of that. It was catching up with friends and just having clinical conversations, you know, making sure that you just still can remember, you know, talking through a primary survey. That was something we learned in first year, and it doesn't get touched on or taught again because it's an expected learning. When you turn up on your first day of a grad, if you can't do that primary survey in 5 seconds, like, you're going to have those, your partner sitting there and being like, okay, well, maybe we need to work from the ground up here. So it's keeping on top of those basics. And then I also worked in the private sector. So throughout my studies, I worked in with a private medical company, and we do sort of event medical work. And that kept me, you know, clinically current, I guess, while we were going through the period, so that when I stepped out on road again, it wasn't that shock to the system.
Yeah, that's really smart, because we've been asked that by quite a few students, because they go, you know, what can I do other than just reading a textbook, or, you know, just reading the DTPs or the clinical guidelines. So that's a really cool way to do it.
Yeah, and I think, like, reading your protocols, reading your textbooks, staying on top of that stuff, like, it's a great turn, like, a great time to go back over the stuff you didn't understand. For me, ECGs are a struggle. They always will be. They're squiggly lines. Ask any of my friends. I can find the big bad nasties. Could not point out a U-wave if I had to. Like, it, they're not my favourite thing in the world. But when I graduated, I went, all right, well, I'm going to have to read ECGs for the rest of my career. So I went back to the basics of it, pulled back out, like, your 5-step, 6-step process, spent 2 weeks going back over them because I had the time to. I wasn't stressed. I didn't have 7 assignments looming over my head. It was just because I wanted to. So it was a great time for me to consolidate the learning of the things that I knew I had the gaps in my knowledge for, and then go on and learn some other stuff. I enrolled in a postgrad. I did a pediatric and obstetric subject. You know, first week on road, I had 3 obstetric patients, and all of that knowledge then comes back into play again. So it's just sort of, you know, find your way that works best for you. If that's getting hands-on, get together with your mates from uni, practice some scenarios, you know, talk it through, get back in contact with old mentors, see if you can, you know, spend some time back at your old uni labs. Just find something that will work for you and just make it happen.
Yeah, nice. So just quickly going back to that interview process as well, were there any sort of tips or, I guess, tricks that you could give for students on how to best succeed at that?
I think the best advice that I have, and obviously I don't sit on a recruitment panel, I'm not really sure what they look for, and they probably look for different things every time, but I always went in with the mindset of, I'm already a paramedic with this service, you know, how do I prove to you that you could hand me the uniform tomorrow and I would do you proud? So it's just, you know, thinking about what they want from their paramedics. What, like, for New South Wales, they have core values. They're plastered everywhere. They're posted on all the different websites. Look them up and have an understanding of what they want out of their dream paramedic, and then show them that you've got that. Because once they see that they've got it, then they can pitch you in that uniform, as opposed to them sort of being like, oh, well, you know, we might need to change X, Y, and Z, or that she doesn't quite fit this component. You know, it's not just a case of who's got the best GPA anymore. It's what can you bring to the table. So it's showing them that you've got those skills. And I think it's, you know, probably a good 75% of our job is just talking to people. So for my panel, we had a on-road paramedic, and then we had sort of a representative of the public. So it's someone who works in sort of a non-paramedic registered position. Just have a chat with them. Like, they're regular people. They're getting paid to sit there and do that job. You're wanting to be their workmate or their colleague down the track. So just have a chat with them. Show them what you would do when you had your patient on the stretcher in front of them, and then just go from there. It's like, the interviews are only as stressful as you make them. And yes, there's a lot on the line. You know, you're thinking that it's your whole career comes down to this one moment. You've been doing this and you've been talking to patients for 3-4 years. Do exactly the same as that. Just, you know, show off a little bit more when you're talking to them.
That makes so much sense. Like, I know that one of my mentors has told me that paramedicine at, like, the ACP level is about 90% social work.
Yep.
It's about having a chat with a person, getting to know them, and I definitely think bring those skills into that interview. Do you think that you building up your resume, so going to the mines, doing your postgrad study in obstetrics, do you think that kind of pushed you forward, got your foot in the door a bit more than if you had just got the bachelor degree?
I don't think it necessarily helped me on paper. I think it gave me different skills so I could present myself in a different way when I went for that interview. So being willing to sort of work in a remote environment, our mindset, it was 15 hours north of here. You know, the closest ambulance was 45 minutes away. So I had that experience of having to be in that situation, having those thoughts in my head. So when you're sitting there and you're answering a question, you've got a different mindset about it. I knew that I could do what they were asking of me, you know, and it sort of changes the way that you answer their questions. And I think it doesn't necessarily, like, a lot of the stuff that we do, and you'll hear everyone talking about, you know, getting involved in events and going to different things and networking, it doesn't necessarily help you get a job faster, but it will help you just move leaps and bounds once you're in that job. Because you have to remember, getting the job's the first step of it. You now have, you know, 40-year career down to look at. And so what can you do before you're even starting to set up that career the way that you want it to be? So I think it's, you know, you don't have to do the extra stuff. You don't have to do the postgrad. It doesn't necessarily make you better or worse, but just think about how you can use that and what you will use it for. Don't just sort of do it just for the sake of having it, you know, written on a resume.
It's the same sort of thing as when you're studying for like exams and things like that. People go, oh, I'm just studying it for the exam. But in this line of work as well, it's not just like you can write off. So I guess that's a really good like mindset to have towards any type of learning you do.
Yeah, no. And, you know, when you're turning up at 2 a.m. in the morning, you're not at your best. No matter what anyone says, no matter how well you've prepped for a night shift, 2 a.m. is not a pleasant time for anyone in the world. And anyone who says so is probably lying, you know, or they just are so fatigued that they can't think straight. So it's having that mentality that, okay, I'm studying it now. Will I remember it at 2 a.m.? Will I remember it when there's a family member screaming at me? Will I remember it when, you know, I'm working as a single officer in a rural town? Like, there's so many different times. So when you're studying for that test, you know, there is the old saying that's a bit of a cliche of like, you're not studying to pass a test, you're studying for when you're in between life and death or however it goes. And at the end of the day, it is true for some things. You know, there will be that time where there's an expectation on you. There'll be a time where every single first year student who's listening to this is a qualified officer who's standing there with a first day grad or with a first year student, and they're going to have to make that choice. And what you do now, it's the same way that we prioritize a primary survey, and we do that in first year because that's the basics that we build up from. So when you're studying to build up those foundations so that you'll have that strength when you're going through, as opposed to sort of chucking some sticky tape on and hoping for the best.
Yeah, cool. That's a really good way to put it. So I guess then we've gone through the process of what it's like to go from, you know, finishing your third or fourth year, depending where you're doing it, and then going through the graduate process and then getting your job. What is that first day as a graduate like?
It is the weirdest feeling. It is... how do I describe it? It's probably, well, for me at least, there was probably about 50% fear. And I think part of that fear was it was a new ambulance service. I hadn't stepped foot in a New South Wales ambulance except for maybe like 5 or 6 times during our induction program. Like, I had no idea. I'm wearing a uniform that wasn't familiar to me. I'm in a state that's not familiar to me, you know. So there was this huge portion of fear. Then there's this excitement of, oh my God, like, I finally reached my goal. I'm about to be a paramedic, you know. And then there's an apprehension probably. It's just, it's the weirdest feeling. It's so exciting. And like, I can still remember every single patient that I went to on that first shift. It was nothing exciting. We didn't do anything that was, you know, challenging. You know, there was no massive trauma, no delivering a baby, nothing like that. They were all just your general run-of-the-mill jobs. But you get looked at differently when you walk in and you're wearing that uniform. No member of the public knows the difference between, you know, graduate paramedic epaulets and, you know, qualified paramedic epaulets. In New South Wales, I wear a light blue as a grad and a qualified wears white. And at nighttime, you can't even really see the difference that closely for those. In Queensland, there's 2 stripes difference, you know, different colours in different states. There's nothing that really takes your eye. And so the general public just go, oh, well, you've got the New South Wales Ambulance logo on your shirt. You're expected to be a New South Wales Ambulance paramedic. You have to step up. So it's a really, it's a weird feeling to sort of have it, but it's so exciting at the same time. That first shift, like, you'll remember it.
That's awesome. Because really, at the end of the day, like, they're just putting all their trust into you because that's what they expect. So yep. That's really awesome.
They've called 000. They expect a New South Wales Ambulance paramedic, or they expect a paramedic to show up, and you're there and it says paramedic on your back. So, you know, jump in or learn how to swim.
So paramedic on your back, like that's your goal. You had that from uni. Do you still have that same goal to keep that on the back, maintain it on the back? Or do you have a new goal now that you're actually in the GPI program?
For me, it was – my goal is sort of a little bit different, I guess. My goal is that it's that mentality of wanting to be a mentor to others. I want a student to be told that they're coming to whatever ambulance station and they've got – you know, they see my name pop up on the email of this is your mentor, and I want them to go, oh, like that's a good mentor. That's someone that I want to learn from. So I think that's more the goal rather than any, you know, different position or different level that I want to achieve. So it's just sort of, and at the moment going through a grad program, I just want to qualify. I want to become the best qualified that I can, and I want to set up those foundations well now so that when I do qualify, I can just sort of move on from there and grow and develop as much. So it's not so much, you know, wanting to keep paramedic or wanting to go into a different position. It's just, I just want to be the, you know, the best that I can. And as cliche as it sounds and as, you know, groan-worthy as it sort of sounds to some people, it's, I think for me, having that as the goal in mind, it means that I don't become relaxed and lazy and I don't step off the plate too much, and I can, you know, keep pushing through and keep developing, you know, at my own speed and my own pace and focus on the areas that I need to.
That is honestly, I think, one of the best goals, like best responses we could have gotten from that. Challenges of that though, have you faced any major challenges since then becoming from a graduate to now like actually in your grad year? Have you had faced any conflicts, anything that?
I think probably the main conflict that I face on a day-to-day basis is, you know, not having too high of an expectation or not having, like, I'm the worst person for imposter syndrome. You know, the fact that I was even invited along to do a podcast, I spent the past 2 weeks being like, no, they'll realize that they've invited the wrong person shortly. Like, you know, they've obviously messaged the wrong person. So it's sort of, that's probably the biggest challenge, and it's, you know, it's a mentality that you have to change from student to grad and grad to qualified. And you'll find yourself, you know, I'm still very early on in the program. You find yourself like a patient will come over and talk to you, or a family member will talk to you. And honestly, I still look around for the adult in the room. And at times, you know, it is a conversation that needs to be handed over to the qualified or to whoever's the senior clinician. You know, conversations, we had a patient who unfortunately was deceased. That's not a conversation that you want to have a grad having. So that's a conversation that you're like, that I will, you know, always defer to the qualified, and I'll learn from them so that one day I can have that conversation. But there are conversations where you have to have with the family. You know, you have to be the one who says, I'm sorry, but, you know, we're having to take your mum, your sister, your brother up to hospital now where, you know, they're quite unwell. This is what's happening. You know, this is what we're doing. There's going to be more paramedics showing up to the scene. You're having to have those conversations because you're that person there in the uniform. That's what they expect from you. You have to sort of rise up to that occasion. So that's probably the biggest challenge day to day that you face. For me, it's also making sure that I eat well. I can eat so much on a shift, but it might not always be the best food. So for me, that's been another challenge, is making sure I'm eating healthy. Like, we do 12-hour shifts. You know, I did a 15-hour night shift the other night. Like, you've got to be eating well to get through it. And when you're first stepping into that full-time world, it's so easy to become, you know, relaxed with your choices. You know, McDonald's at 2 a.m. in the morning looks like a great option until it becomes 4 a.m. and you're really regretting your choices. So I think those probably be the two big challenges that you sort of face throughout the program, or that I've found at least.
So what do you do then for, like you just said, you have to prepare, you know, food and things like that. How do you do it, like, from personal experience?
For me, I meal prep. I'm a creature of habit. I have pretty much like a menu of 5 different foods that I'll eat on shift, and I just pick whatever those 5 will be. Because I travel between Brisbane and the Gold Coast so much for like before and after my shifts, you know, I'll head down the night before my day shift. I'll cook up all my meals, my lunches and my dinners for all of the shifts. I have the same snacks on all of them, and I always take a couple of extras, and then in my locker at work I've got some backup options so that I'm not, you know, being drawn into the Red Rooster or whatever it's going to be. And obviously, like, you can still have those meals and you can have them as your once-offs, but you never realize just how easy it is to just fall into the behavior of being like, oh, okay, it's an afternoon shift, I'm going to go and get Macca's, I'm going to go and do this, oh, and we'll have an ice cream too. Like, it's very easy to spiral down with it. So you just set it up, for me at least, set up the structure at the start of the week and just hope that it follows through.
Because then it just becomes a habit and you don't think about it after that.
When you've got the full-time paycheck to justify purchasing all of that food, like, you know, a 50-cent ice cream at Macca's it's nothing. Like, okay, well, I just had, you know, two missed meals and I want shift overtime. Like, I can justify any food purchase now, but once you sort of get that habit into place, it's really hard to break the unhealthy lifestyle of it. So for me, it was just setting it up from the get-go. And obviously, you know, you have your days where you go and you get your cheeky, you know, packet of nuggets or whatever it's going to be. But, you know, at least I've put in the effort and tried for the week and see how it goes.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, you did say before that, you know, you can have like 15-hour shifts and all that sort of stuff. So how do you prevent, like, before we were chatting prior to recording, fatigue and things like that? So burnout or just looking after your own well-being so that you're fresh?
I think we're really lucky, especially in this day and age. There is so many support services available that each ambulance service have. You know, you look at Melbourne who have therapy support dogs that you can go and encounter. I think New South Wales have a couple of them, none up in my area. So if anyone from New South Wales is listening, we'll gladly take some up in the North Coast.
We made a post on our Instagram story of the thoughts on that, and it honestly came back with like the best response about therapy dogs. So
I think last year Bruce from Victoria got invited to be a guest speaker at one of the conferences. I unfortunately was unable to attend, but my friends FaceTimed me, so I got to meet Bruce via FaceTime, and I think it still probably ranks as one of the best days of my entire final year of uni. But yeah, so there's all these different resources that the ambulance service themselves put out, but part of it is just, you know, the team that you have around you. I've got some really close friends that the degree gave me. They're the people that when you're having that bad shift that you can turn to and talk to and just sort of help you just get through the tough times. And I think it really helps that they sort of understand the world of paramedicine a bit, because they know, you know, sometimes you have those shifts and it's just, there's no other word, it's just terrible. You know, nothing's going your way. You're tired. You didn't get enough food. You didn't get enough sleep. You know, a patient went south. Like there's so many different options that could have happened. And so having that network around you that can help and support you and understand that, you know, okay, well, you've had this bad day. Let's just make sure that we don't have like a negative pattern develop. You know, let's make sure that, you know, you don't develop an unnatural habit that will develop from that and push through for the next few weeks. Who can look out for those red flags and be like, okay, you know, maybe it's time that we go and talk to someone else. But to deal with the fatigue, it's easy to say go and get enough sleep, you know, 8 hours of sleep a night and eat well and do this and do that. You need to be realistic. You're not going to have that every single week. So I think it's not being afraid to know your own red flags, know what happens and what your notifications are from your own body as to, okay, maybe I need to have a day off. Maybe I need to reach out for help. Maybe I need to, you know, have a me day. Maybe I'm putting too much in. I know that I'm, you know, quite bad at doing it. I'll try and cram so much into my days off. And we're really lucky. Our roster gives us, you know, a sleep day and then four full clear days off. It's incredible. But if I'm trying to cram, you know, 5 days worth of stuff into those days and then go back and work for four shifts, I'm going to be fatigued at the end of it. So it's just making sure that you give yourself that time, you give yourself that breathing room so that you can, you know, go forth and do what you need to do on those shifts and you can catch up on what you need to. So I think part of it, you know, is creating those habits, having those realistic ideals about what you're going to have out of it. And it's the same as when you're on placement. I think, you know, for all of our students who are listening, you're doing a placement, you've got exams coming up, you've got assignments hanging over your head. You don't get 4 days off because you're going to still be going to your normal work. You're going to have to earn money so that you can pay rent that week. It's creating the structure on the lead up to going onto placement. And it's being realistic when you're on placement. And if you're on placement and the shift is becoming too much, you turn to your mentor and you just flag it to them and you say, hey, look, like for me, we went out on a placement and I had so many assignments, I just didn't know what to do with myself. And I just turned to a mentor and said, look, I'm struggling a little bit. I don't feel like I can give 100% today. And you make it work. So for that day, I became the second officer and I just, you know, helped with and looked at extrication plans and I looked at, you know, how to park an ambulance, like what angles do you park it on? Do we reverse park into the scene? You just sort of change what your goals are to get out of the day and then you're not fatigued for the next shift and you're not, you know, perpetuating the cycle of it. So you just have to sort of work with what your body gives you and every single person is going to be different with it.
So that's such a good point. Like definitely burnout such a major factor, especially in the paramedic profession. What do you do? So do you take a me day? Do you just say, this is a Brit day today? Or
I eat my way through a jar of Nutella. Like, if I'm being completely honest. Yeah.
You don't want too many bad days of that though.
No. It has to be balanced out a little bit. For me, it's sort of, it depends a little bit. I will sort of go, you know, and have that me time, you know, a nice warm bath, bubble bath sort of stuff, bit of chocolate, maybe a glass of wine if I need it. Like, it's just, I might have like that me time day, or I might just have a day where I just catch up on just little jobs. It might be that, you know, there's still dishes to be done and there's still vacuuming and there's, you know, three little emails that I haven't sent off and they're just hanging over my head and I just sort of catch up on all of those. Or it's just a day where I just head out with friends. It might just be a simple text in the group chat of, hey, I need to go to the beach. Hey, what are you guys doing? I need a coffee. Like, and you just sort of catch up with your friends. So it sort of depends on where the burnouts come from. And then it's, for me at least, it's resetting what the structure is going to be. What didn't work or what went wrong to cause me to, you know, get to this stage? Was it that I had a really bad job? In which case, you know, sadly, you can't really control that. You're going to have bad jobs, you know, or is it, okay, I didn't meal prep this week well. I became really hungry. I was eating bad food and a chocolate and this and that. And okay, so next time I just need to get back on top of my diet. Or maybe it was that I didn't go to the gym or I didn't do any exercise. So just sort of, for me at least, it's that detective work to find out what went wrong and how can I prevent it from happening again and, you know, hope for the best.
And so have you gained all of this sort of through reflection over the past, you know, 6 months or so from going, okay, these are the things that work for me, these are the things that don't work for me?
Yeah, there's a lot of trial and error. And for me, like, I did most of my placements at a really busy inner city Brisbane station. So you didn't see your station at all while you're on shift. You logged on and you logged off and that was all that you saw of it. So I learnt not to sleep on my night shifts and to have all my sleep beforehand. But then when you go to like my station, we can sometimes get a bit of downtime. So I then found that I wasn't quite as tired going into my night shift. So I wasn't sleeping as much as I normally would. But then if you have a busy shift, I found that I was then sort of on the back foot of it a little bit and I had to play the catch up game afterwards. So it's a bit of trial and error. It's finding out what works best for you. Find out what works best for your area. You know, especially like for students going out on placement, some of them will have never done a night shift before. And that first night shift is rough. Like, my first ever shift ever as a student was a night shift. And I can remember the next morning not being able to unlock my own front door because I was still trying to use my car key to unlock the door. I was that tired. So it's, you know, throughout your degree, you'll find what works, you'll find what doesn't. You'll spend a day where you go, oh, I'll be fine. I don't need to sleep too much, or, you know, I can stay up a little bit later and watch a couple more episodes of this Netflix show, and you'll go to work the next day and you will regret your choices. So it's working it out. You've got to fail sometimes to work out what will work best for you. And it's just having the flexibility around it and having, for me at least, it's having things set up. And that was what I worked out quite early on in my student years and then have just sort of carried it over as I've gone through.
Nice. So basically from that, I guess, from learning all of that over the past 6 or so months, what, now that you're in the position you're in, what advice would you give to yourself on, like, well, just brand new graduate paramedic Brit?
Sleep more. Like, you know, you can laugh about it, you know, every single day, but one of the biggest problems that I find is just not sleeping well. So I think if I could go back 6 months ago, just take advantage. It's, you know, it's what we always joke about. You know, remember back in kindergarten when we'd have nap time, and you laugh about it now because you never wanted to have a nap when you're in kindergarten. Take your nap time when you can get it. Like, just bank up some of that sleep. But I think the other thing, you know, 6 months ago is just have fun and enjoy it. Like, it's so much fun being out on road. It's such a privilege. And, you know, it sounds corny whenever you say it, but you'll be driving in an ambulance and a little toddler turns and waves and wants you to, you know, you put on the sirens or you put on the beacons and their faces light up. And so I think 6 months ago, I wish that I, you know, started to enjoy those moments a bit more. You know, you spend your entire, for me at least, the past 6 months have just been spent working out how to get in and out of hospitals and ambulance stations. Like, it's the little things that will trip you up when you least expect it. So, yeah, I think it's just sort of just embracing those moments and enjoying the journey. Like, we only get one internship if you do it well. So, you know, take advantage of it.
Yeah, you really are living the dream.
Look, it has its moments.
That's so good to hear. So, have you had any students come on whilst you're doing your grad year? So, students coming in from their placements?
We have a couple at station. New South Wales tries to sort of keep the truck that a grad is on without a student on it just until the end of the internship phase. Just we're still learning. You don't need to have the, you know, the added stress of having a student who's also learning at the same time. You know, and it's also, it's not quite fair on the qualified officer as well when it happens sometimes. It can be a bit of a struggle. So they try and keep it. So I haven't had any on my truck. We have had a couple around at station. It's been really interesting being on the other side of it. And they've all been, I think we've only had first year students on the, well, we've actually got first year, first placements out at the moment with us. Wow. So, you know, everyone's excited and it changes the atmosphere on station. It's really interesting seeing it from the other side.
Yeah, that's so fair to say. So as a student coming onto your first placement, second placement, even your last placement, what do you think now looking back at it and your time spent, what do you think helps them stand out into going into like a paramedic profession?
I think it's attitude. Out of anything, I think it's the attitude that you can have. You know, you can teach someone the dosage of adrenaline. You can teach someone how to put on a pelvic, like a pelvic binder. You can't teach them to have a good attitude. And I think if you're a student who turns up and you're eager, you know, you're wanting to learn, you're asking good questions, you've got a willingness to jump in, like no mentor will put a student into a situation that that student is not ready for. You know, a lot of the mentors that get buddied up with students have been doing it for a long time, have seen, you know, the job, and they'll be watching the job at all times over the back of the student. So I think it's having that willingness and that ego and that good attitude about it. And it's also not feeling, I guess, like there's anything too beneath you, and having those good realistic goals. So for me, when I was on my very final placement, my only goal was at the end of it, I wanted on my final shift for my mentor to be willing for me to be the grad on that truck. That was my goal, because I knew that the next shift that I did would be in an ambulance as a graduate paramedic. There's no two ways about it. You're either not going to jump in and do a shift again, or you're going to be a grad paramedic. There's no other options. So for me, having that realistic goal of, okay, would you be willing to, for me to be sitting next to you in a state service uniform, doing this job, being paid for it, instead of being like, oh, well, you know, I want to do, like, I want to run this job, or I want to single-handedly do X, Y, and Z. It's having those realistic goals. And when you're in first year, all the goal needs to be is able to talk to people. Like, we, you know, we touched on it earlier. A huge portion of this job is talking to people. Can you sit in the back of an ambulance with a, you know, 90-year-old nana who's got dementia, who thinks that it's 1930, can you have a conversation with them? Can you comfort them? Can you, you know, still provide all the cares that you need to and communicate to them what you're doing? You know, can you go from that to a 5-year-old child who's, you know, scared, who's just had three complete strangers turn up with a giant ambulance with all these kits, who thinks that you're going to, you know, jab them with needles? Can you have that conversation with them? Can you talk to the 30-year-old who's got chest pain, who's freaking out because her mother's just died of, you know, a heart attack or something like that? Can you have those conversations? So I think have those realistic goals and don't be afraid of the basics. Don't be afraid to ask for what you want out of that placement. If you are worried about, you know, assessing a patient and your mentors are asking you to do it and you don't feel like you're good enough, ask them if they can jump into a training room and just spend 2 hours just running through a primary survey, running through a head to toe, setting yourself up with all of those sorts of things under your belt. I think it puts you into a great standing when you're the student, and that's the things that we remember. You know, it's the student. It's not necessarily that you have to be on the ball for the whole, you know, that you can never turn off, that you can never sit down and relax. Like, we don't expect that of any student whatsoever. But can you take advantage of the opportunities when they're there? You know, I had a student come up and ask me if I could show them how to set up a giving set for a bag of fluids. I, you know, couldn't do it then. So I said, okay, I'll come in 15 minutes early and we'll run through it all. You know, it's those little things. It's taking advantage of those opportunities when they're there and asking for them, because if you're sitting on the couch, no one's going to come over to you and try and give you an additional opportunity. You have to sort of stand up and be an adult learner and go for it a bit yourself.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a really good piece of advice, because at the end of the day, we were having a discussion only in the past couple of days with other students, and we were talking about how important just a learning mindset is. So, you know, it's not about comparing yourself to other students, say, oh, they know that more than me, or like, I'm really good at this, they're not, or whatever. It's about, hey, I don't know this, can you teach me, or can you make me better at this? Same thing when you go on placement, like, oh, it's not that, oh, that's a silly question.
Yeah. And I think like the whole attitude about silly questions, like I've worked with qualifiers with, you know, 20 something years under their belt, or 30 years under their belt, who, you know, might be critical care paramedics, or might have worked on helicopters, like who have these careers where you look and you're like, wow, that's like, that's what I want, who will still turn around and ask some questions and you're like, oh, okay, like that's a really basic question, but I haven't thought of, okay. And then you both go off and you research it. So as a student, don't be afraid to ask. Pick your times when you're going to, you know, at a cardiac arrest when, you know, there's 12 other competing sort of things. Don't ask a question that's not of vital importance. You know, obviously speak up if you need to. If it's something that you're worried about clinically, speak up. Pick your times when you're back in the truck and you're having a debrief. Ask your questions. You know, I used to take a notepad with me and I would write down every single question that I could think of and bug my mentors until they were ready for me just to, like, they were probably grateful for log off time to come because I would stop asking questions. So don't be afraid to ask those questions and take advantage of the time that you've got on that truck, because it is limited. And then one day you'll be handed a uniform and there'll be an expectation. So, you know, take advantage of it while you've got the chance.
That's really cool.
There's a really good quote. I don't know exactly who's it from, but I'm going to quote Hayden from the Free Radicals podcast because that's where I heard it from. But it's that people forgive silly questions. No one forgives silly mistakes because you didn't ask a silly question. And I think as a student, first, second, third year, or even as a grad on truck, or even as a CCP working it up in the air, I think you can always ask that silly question because it's not that silly to that other person, because one day it might come up and now you're more prepared because of it.
Yeah. And, you know, take advantage of the time to ask that question. Like, you know, I'm a grad. I still will, you know, write in my notebook and ask different people back at station. And if you get an answer that you're not happy with or that you're not sure about, go and ask someone else. Like, just because you've partnered up with your mentors, yes, they should be your first point of contact. But if you see someone else that, you know, you might know, or you might be partnered with ACP2 mentors or qualified mentors, and you see a CCP or in Queensland, like a HARU officer or, you know, Micah down in Victoria, take advantage, go and ask them. Like, these people, they get put into these positions, and we all, you know, no matter what level you are, there's an expectation that you will educate the staff around you. Whether that's you're a student and your classmate comes up and goes, hey, we had this patient, I'm not sure, have you ever done, you know, a soft collar? I've only ever used the hard collars before. Ask your classmates, get them involved in the questioning. If you're not sure, then you go to, you know, your next level up. Okay, I've asked my mentors weren't sure. Okay, now we're going to go to a CCP. Okay, now we're going to go to, you know, and you just work your way through the levels of it and you get as much information, because there's no, you know, there's no other situation where you're going to be sitting around where you're going to have access to these people except when you're on placement. Take advantage of it. Sit in a write-up room, ask a hypothetical question. You might think it's silly. I can guarantee you at least two of the other officers in that room will have probably had the same thought and just hasn't been willing to ask it because there's, oh, okay, well, I'm a qualified, I'm now meant to know all of it. Not the case at all. And that attitude's changed so much, especially with the new generation of paramedics that are coming through, who are coming through and are willing to have these conversations. Ask away. If a paramedic can't answer it, they'll probably go off and try and find the answers for you. If they can't find it, they're probably going to tell you to go and research it and come back and tell them. Like, you know, there's no such thing as these silly questions, and the mentality of it, you know, it's not beneficial to what you'll come out with at the end of the day. It's your learning, you're paying to do the degree, get as much out of it, you know, that you can.
That's awesome. So we're just going to finish off on three questions. They're going to be the questions we ask everyone we interview, just so that students get to see, I guess, what the diverse answers are. So they can all get a bit of a different answer every time. So the first one is, what mistake have you made that has resulted in your greatest learning?
Oh, what mistake? Well, I mean, like, if you're looking at sort of clinically, I tried to put a sling on back to front the other week. Like, it's something so simple. I've worked in, you know, a private sector where for 5 years that was our bread and butter. And I spent a good 5 minutes with a kid trying to put a sling on back to front. And I couldn't for the life of me work out what was going wrong until my partner turned around and I realized. And for me, that was such a good reminder that, you know, you can't bypass the basics. You know, the basics are what gets you through, and not to become complacent with it. You know, just because you've been doing a skill for so long doesn't mean that you're not going to forget how to do it one day. And, you know, for me, I went back and I practiced putting on a sling, you know, 27, 30 times at station until I could do it and remembered how to do all the steps of it. So I think that's probably, at the moment, that's probably the best thing that I can think of. And it gives everyone a good laugh at, you know, a grad putting a sling on back to front.
So a little bit of pearl of wisdom going away from today, what advice would you give to a paramedic student?
Take advantage of every moment that's offered to you. I think that's probably the biggest thing is, you know, if you want something out of the career, make it happen. If you want to sit on Haru one day and you want to be turning up in that, you know, vehicle and have those epaulets on your shoulders, go and chat with every Haru officer that you can find. Go and take advantage of it. So take advantage of the moments that are there. Your student years are your most protected years of study. Take advantage of them. Make it work to be what you want it to be.
That's awesome. And the last one is, what did you used to think to be true that you no longer believe to be true?
That I would catch up on sleep. It's not true. You're never going to catch up. But, you know, I used to think that I'd be able to catch up, or, you know, once I got to the end that it would get easier. It's not the case. You just have to adjust your perspective and you have to set your foundations up strong.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. And speaking to us and hopefully giving all of our listeners a bit of pearl of wisdom that can hopefully help them in their transition years. So I guess we're just going to head on out and we'll catch you in the next episode. So you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at the Student Paramedic Podcast, and we'll catch you in the next one. Thank you.